record on this computer. And I'm also going to record on my phone just in case as well. One second. Okay, we are starting. Erev Tov, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Pesach, Hilchot Pesach review, 2022, Tavshin Pei Bet, Shnat Shemitah. Can everybody hear me on Zoom? Just, you know, thumbs up if you can hear. If you have questions on Zoom, okay, I'm putting everybody on mute. But if you have questions, I'm going to ask you to write them into the chat. Exactly. So write them into the chat, and I'll take questions over the time. Hello, hello, welcome back. Okay, let's start with a joke. Well, before we start with a joke, let me ask you, anxiety levels, stress levels, Pesach, raise your hand if you are 7 and above in terms of being stressed out for Pesach. 7, 8, do we even 8, 10? Who here is feeling like a 1 or 2? 1 or 2, very chilled out. Yeah, 5, somewhere in the middle, 5. Okay, so we're coming into Pesach. We're coming into Pesach, and we have to get into, you know, start working those Pesach muscles again, right? Start working them, and that's why we're here. Let's start with a joke. So person dies, and he goes up to heaven, and he's told, you know who's going to take you around to heaven? Your tour guide is going to be David, no one else than David Ben-Gurion. So he's like, wow, this is a big honor. David Ben-Gurion's going to give me a tour. So Ben-Gurion meets him and he says, listen, you can make a decision now. You can go to heaven or you go to hell. He says, okay, I want to see what each of them look like. So he goes to heaven. Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. Sunny skies, clouds. It's nice. Some flowers, trees. Very nice. Okay. He says, take me to hell. He goes to hell. They're partying. They're having a great time. It's like, wow, this is the place to be. So he says, you know what? I think I'm going to go to hell. So Ben-Gurion says, fine. So he takes him to hell. And he gets to hell and he sees volcanic ash rising and he sees devils and he sees, people being punished. And he says, wait a second, I didn't sign up for this. What is going on here? And Ben-Gurion said, he said, you know, when you came the first time, you came here as a tourist. But now you live here. So this is a good intro for not just, you know, for living in Israel, but also for getting ready for Pesach in Israel. Because in some ways it is, there's certain leniencies that apply here. Okay, and we're going to go through some of those things. There's certain complexities that also apply here. We're going to only have one day, one Seder. It's Pesach is 7 days, not 8 days. There are some differences in Minhagim. But it also, you have to adjust to new things, new stores, new products, new labels, things that you might understand, might not understand. Yeah, it's 8 days this year, nachon, which we'll talk about as well. So that's the first point. The second, a piece of drush, Yossi Klein HaLevi has a beautiful idea that there are Pesach Jews and there are Purim Jews. Okay. What's a Purim Jew? A Purim Jew is the whole world's out to get me. The whole world, they're Haman. Haman is out to kill us, the Jewish people. Pesach Jew is a very different mindset. A Pesach Jew is thinking, I need to care about the whole world. Just like I was a slave, other people are enslaved. And this Pesach, we're holding both of these hats, right? On the one hand, thinking about, for example, what's happening in Ukraine. And we're feeling, hey, we should try to do something. We're feeling a sense of universal responsibility. And especially for people who are trying to fight for freedom, which is something that we could understand. On the other hand, with everything happening here in Medinat Yisrael and these very scary attacks over the last few days, we're also wearing our Purim hat and we're recognizing that that we are, and you know, I'm the Vadad Yishkon. We dwell alone, and that we have a unique circumstances. And so we daven for redemption in both of these arenas, in both of these places, both for Am Yisrael and beyond during this Pesach. And on that note, we're going to. We're going to start talking about the halachot of Pesach. Now, I will tell you, I've spent a lot of time this year working on the website. We actually have a Shift Day website, and I've posted a lot of the Shift Day, the material for Pesach, on the website. I'm going to send that out to you in the next day or two as I work on it, continue to work on it. But many of these summaries of this material is on the website, and I will send out a summary of this recording of this shiur as well. Okay, let's talk about Pesach and spring cleaning. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman, Tav Kuf Kaftet. I also want to recommend, take notes. take notes. You're active. You're not just being passive. You're being active. The Shulchan Aruch teaches us chayav adam liot sameach v'tov lev b'moed. You're supposed to be happy on Pesach. This cleaning for Pesach is not spring cleaning. Okay, you only need to. We'll talk about where you need to check. Where you need to check for chametz, and that's the first topic we're going to deal with, which is cleaning for chametz and doing betikar chametz, bitul chametz, and where to check and how to check. You're supposed to be happy during the chag. So if the chag is making you miserable in your preparation, maybe you need to reassess, how you were preparing for the chag. Okay, so there's no doubt that preparing for chag is hard, but it's not spring cleaning. You don't need to, as we'll talk about, find every single crumb in every single corner in your house. Okay, if you're doing spring cleaning, you're cleaning the gutters. If you're doing Pesach cleaning, you're not cleaning the gutters. If you're doing spring cleaning, you're cleaning out the spider webs, okay, on the top of your ceiling. If you're doing Pesach cleaning, you're not cleaning out spider webs, okay? You're scrubbing grout with toothbrushes if you are doing spring cleaning. We don't do that on Pesach. So let's talk about chametz. There are five different prohibitions that apply to chametz. Chametz is something that we take very seriously. Chametz represents arrogance, boastfulness, the ego, the position that I am always right, a bloated self-image. And so chametz is not something that we separate from during the year. And because of that, we need to be more careful specifically on Pesach. So there are five prohibitions. You don't eat chametz, even in a mixture. We don't derive benefit, hana'ah, from chametz. We'll see a ramification of that. Now let us feed chametz to your dog. We'll get there. You may not possess chametz. Bal yira'eh u'bal yematzeh. You need to get rid of ownership of your chametz. And you need to destroy your chametz. Tashbitu. So five different prohibitions. How do we define chametz? Chametz is defined as the same materials that you use to make bread. You make chametz. It's five different grains. Okay, oat and rye and wheat and barley and spelt. And this is a good lesson in life. The same thing that you could use to create chametz is also used to make matzah. Okay, and this is true of life, that we have many tools in life that could be good, used for bad, for good. We have different character traits that can be useful or that can be used for bad. Okay, so how do we get rid of chametz on Pesach? We do three things. We do betikar chametz. We search for chametz on the 14th of this year. It's going to fall out on Thursday night. Pesach is starting on Friday night, by the way, in coincides with Shabbat. So we're going to search for chametz right after Tinnakol Chavim, when the stars come out. We start searching for chametz on the 14th at night. We do bitul chametz. We nullify it in our minds, okay? And we also do mechirat chametz. Some people sell their chametz. And there's also, if you go to, again, you'll go to the Shiftei website, you'll see the times, different times that you can sell your chametz. And we do it through the Rabbanut here in Ra'anana. Where do you need to check for chametz? And what are you looking for? You need to check for chametz anywhere where it is likely or possible that you brought chametz. You don't bring chametz into your bathroom, you don't need to check in your bathroom. If you don't bring chametz into your storage room, if you never brought chametz into there, you don't need to check there, okay? This is the explicit Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Lamed Gimel. If you didn't eat behind your fridge, you don't need to check behind your fridge. If you didn't, put chametz into your light bulb, you don't need to check in your light bulb, okay? So, or in your ceiling fan. Okay, so eliminate, first of all the places where you know for sure you did not bring chametz. For those of us who have young children in our homes, okay, chametz is really found everywhere. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah says explicitly, this is Siman Taf Lamed Gimel, in a place with young children, you have to check anywhere they might have brought, put chametz. Now, a favorite trick, and I learned this from Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, who was actually my madrich when I was in first grade in B'nai Shir and in Tinek. I didn't learn this then, but I learned it from him later in life, that whatever you're not using on Pesach, let's say you have all your dairy dishes in one cabinet. If you're not using that, because it's all chametz stick, you're not using it, so then put tape on it, or put a sign, chametz, and that's it. You don't need to clean it. You don't need to search there. You're selling that. You're not using it over Pesach. Okay, the things that you're not using, you don't need to clean your toaster oven if you're not using it on Pesach. And by the way, you can't use your toaster oven on Pesach because you can't kasher it. Just put it away. Close it up. You don't need to clean it first and then put it away. You can just put it away. Obviously, if you see pieces of bread in it, fine, get it out. But like, you don't need to scrub it for a full hour and then put away your toaster oven. Just put it away. Sure. So Bal Yimatzeh applies to a piece of chametz that's larger than a kezayit. It needs to be 30 grams. It's got to be sizable. We're not talking about crumbs here. Okay, we're not talking about, now I'm going to get there in 1 second. That's literally the next question where we're getting to. Okay, so unless you're planning to use a certain space, you don't need to clean there. If you're closing up certain rooms in your house, you're closing up certain cabinets, put tape on it, put a sign, chametz, and that's what you're selling. You don't need to then clean those areas. Okay. Now, of course, the shelves you're going to use in your kitchen, you should clean that because that's something you're going to use. We'll talk about cleaning your fridge. You're going to use your fridge. So you have to clean out your fridge. To clean out your freezer, by the way. We have more breadcrumbs in our freezer than anywhere else in the house. Because when you put the challah back in the freezer and it all, you know, gets mixed around. So it's something to be aware. Do you need to check for crumbs for Pesach? The Chazon Ish paskened, and he said this for Chumrah, that a person needs to be stringent even to search for crumbs. The Chayyadim also paskens this way. And therefore, there are people who look in all their Sfarim and all their books and, you know, they're checking for little crumbs of chametz. We do not paskin that way, at least in our communities. We do not paskin this way. You want to be stringent. You're more than welcome to be stringent. Just don't expect your spouse or your kids to do it. You could do it yourself if you want to be stringent. And we paskin that you need to search for a kazayit size of chametz, okay? Like an olive size of chametz. It's got to be a decent size of chametz. That's what's prohibited when it comes to bal yera'ev, owning chametz, and bal yimatzeh. You know, so again, you may clean. There's nothing wrong with cleaning up your house. You should clean up your house before Pesach. But, you know, again, there are limitations and you don't have to be searching every single corner for a little piece of dust of chametz. That's not, you know, that's not what's obligated. We'll talk about, though, the night of the 14th where you do a little bit more of that. What about chametz in the, 1 second. What about chametz in the garbage? Okay. So Friday, you're getting ready for Pesach. You're going to put all of your chametz into your garbage can and it's probably not going to be taken until Sunday morning, right? Sunday, Monday morning. So technically, you're going to have chametz there. So Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that if you put your chametz into your garbage can, that's a sign that you don't own it anymore. Okay, but some say, well, if it's still in your possession, it's still on your property, that might be a problem. So if you live in an apartment building and you put your chametz into the general garbage center, fine, not a big deal. But if the garbage can is on your property, so no, one option is to put it on in a public garbage. You know, there are public garbage cans. The other option is if it's still in your reshut, it's still in your possession, pour a little bit of bleach on it, and then it's certainly not going to be anything that anybody would eat, sort of a form of destroying it and making it pasul. And that's what you could do on the Friday going into Pesach when it comes to doing bi'ur chametz. If you're going to be on vacation, when do you do bidikat chametz? Let's say you're going on vacation, you're leaving on Wednesday to go to, you're going to the Dead Sea. That's right, you're going to the Dead Sea. So if you're going to the Dead Sea, you're leaving on Wednesday night. On Wednesday, let's say, then Tuesday night. The night before you leave, you do bidikat chametz in your home without a bracha. Then, wherever you're going to be on the night of the Thursday, this year it's Thursday night, okay, going into Friday, you do bidikat chametz wherever you're staying. Okay, with a bracha. Exactly, with a bracha. Okay? Yeah.
You leave the house after you already there. Oh,
if you mean you're leaving on Friday morning? You left on Friday morning, you do bidikat chametz in your home on Thursday night. You're gonna have chametz on Friday already. You have to get rid of it by 10 o'clock in the morning. I mean, right? If it's already after, if it's assumed to be clean, you're going to your son's home and it's assumed that he did bidikat chametz, you don't need to check anything. Okay, if you go to a place where it's likely it could be dirty, that then you have to do bidikat chametz as well. In some cases, you do bidikat chametz even on Pesach itself. David, yes, question.
You can't use a convection microwave.
Okay, we're going to get to convection microwaves later on. Okay, hold the question about microwaves and how to clean them. Okay, this is everything related. Any other questions relating to chametz, getting rid and cleaning your chametz on Pesach? Questions here. If anybody wants to write in anything on Zoom, feel free to write anything specifically related to this topic. You could write into the chat. Okay, moving on to topic number two. Products that you are allowed to consume and not allowed to consume on Pesach. In general, you have something that has chametz in it, but it is not ra'ui l'achilat kelev. A dog would not come near it, then it's not considered chametz. You don't need to worry about that. Okay. So for example, let's say you have something with denatured alcohol in it, which is poison. Denatured alcohol means alcohol. They put poison into it so that no one would digest it or think to drink it. That makes it Ein ra'i la'achila kelev. Okay, so if you have rubbing alcohol in your home, and if no dog would eat it, you don't need to worry about it, even though alcohol might come from chametz. Okay, now, this means that dog food that has chametz in it is a problem, because the dog is going to eat the dog food, even if we might not eat it. Okay, the dog is willing to eat the dog food. Okay, so that means you need to buy, specifically you need to buy, dog food is the first product that we're dealing with here. You need to buy kasher lepesach, dog food or cat food or fish food, if you have a pet. That's product number one that we're dealing with. Okay, the same thing is true with hamster food. If a dog won't eat it, I guess you could say that animals are equivalent in this regard. Okay, so you should have you should buy specific food for Pesach that works for your animal. Let's talk about medicines on Shabbat, medication on Shabbat. When I was growing up, I don't know about when all you were growing up, there are all these lists of kasher lePesach medicines, right? Long lists, right? The OU stopped doing this. Okay, we don't do lists of medicines anymore. It's very simple, and there are certain medicines that have starches or certain ingredients that might be that might have chametz in them. However, when it comes to medicine, what are you doing? You're ingesting it. You're not eating. No one eats medicine. If you eat medicine, we should talk about it. This is about from another perspective, but no one eats their medicine. You swallow medicine. Okay. Now, the Rosh Rabbeinu Asher felt that if you consume something, it's like you make it into food, and therefore it's like an act of achila. For him, he felt it was problematic. We don't paskin like the Rosh. We assume that even if you swallow medicine, it's not the same thing as eating, and therefore you don't need to worry about medicine that you swallow. It could have non-kosher ingredients in it, and it could have Pesach, it could be have chametz ingredients in it, as long as you're swallowing it. Yes? Okay. According to Rav Schechter, it includes vitamins as well. Okay, now, if you could find kasher lePesach things, so great, I'm saying, you don't need to go out of your mind to find it. If you see it on the shelf, okay, I take vitamin C every day, and da-da-da, so I'm going to take it. Now, there is an exception to this. And the exception is if you have flavored medication, is a different story, okay? Again, we're talking about most adult medications do not have flavors in them, right? You swallow them, whatever it is. But if you have flavored medication where you're tasting it, then you need to make sure it's kasher lePesach, yeah. No, but it's not considered chametz. No, it's not. It's not an issue of. I hear what you're saying. You're deriving indirect. You're deriving benefit from another way. But it's not. If it has gelatin, okay. So in general, gelatin is in Israel is considered kasher according to the Rabbanut. In Chutz La'aretz, I don't know about South Africa, but in America, gelatin products do not have hechsher. The OU, for example, doesn't put a hechsher on these things. You could take again if you're taking, let's say you're taking fish oil as your medic, some people take this stuff, right? My parents like this stuff. I don't know. But if you could find one that's kasher, great. If not, and your doctor says you need it and it's healthy for you, so then you could take it with the gelatin. Okay, but again, you're not tasting it. These are things that you swallow. You're swallowing it, not a problem. And also gelatin, those gummies, the gummy worms, they all have gelatin in them here in Israel. Gelatin is often made out of it's either fish bones or sometimes pig bones. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so try to find one that's, check if it's not kasher lePesach. It might be kasher lePesach. And see if there's one that is kasher lePesach. We could talk about it if you want to ask about a specific one at a later point in time. I'm happy to. Okay, yeah.
Kosher there.
Gelatin, different standards of kashrut. Different just same thing here. You could have sirloin steak here, right? Which is made out of the hind of the animal, whereas you don't they don't have this in Chutz La'aretz. Different standards of kashrut. Okay. Soaps and cosmetics. Soaps and cosmetics. We are lenient about any soaps or cosmetics. I don't know any people who eat or consume a soap or cosmetics or perfumes, even if these things might contain alcohol, certainly detergents, shoe polishes, dishwashing detergent. None of these things need to be kasher lePesach. You can continue using them. You don't need to put them away. You don't need to sell them. Use them on Pesach. So this is not an issue, any of these things. There are some who are decide to be are stringent about these things. In our communities, we are not one. As there's no need to be stringent about these things. Same thing, soaps, shampoos. You don't need to worry about them having a hechsher lePesach for these things. Okay, we're going to dishwasher. We didn't get to dishwasher yet, David. Okay, jump in the gun. Milk products. There are some who are stringent not to buy milk on Pesach itself. Why not? Let's say you have a cow, and the cow is fed chametz, and then they milk the cow, and you're drinking that milk, and so you're benefiting from the usage of chametz on Pesach. Okay, that's the concern. So there are some people who are stringent who only buy the milk before Pesach. Okay, this is not an issue. Tnuva, and Rav Weitman, who's the head posek of Tnuva, which is the largest dairy organization here in Israel, whatever it is, company. They, two things. Number one, they make sure that all of their animals are consuming Pesach kosher products throughout the Chag. That's number one. Number two, they even sift through the milk to make sure that there are no, any pieces of chametz in them. So none of that, that's not an issue. You can also buy milk on Pesach itself. Yeah. Already from?
Yes.
Yeah, because they don't want anything in the stomach or whatever it is. Nachon. Now, what about eggs? Eggs are not supervised on Pesach, and it's possible the chickens are eating something that's not kosher Pesach. One should ideally buy eggs before the Chag and have enough to get through the Chag. Okay, that's the ideal. Toothpaste, lipstick, mouthwash. It's good to be stringent here and make sure to have toothpaste that is kasher lePesach based on the principle that you're tasting it. It's going into your mouth. I imagine most people here don't eat toothpaste like my children do, but they always want to brush your teeth more, right? Can I brush my teeth again? So it's customary to buy kasher lePesach toothpaste and toothbrush and anything again that you might be putting into your mouth and tasting. Okay, next product that one is actually not allowed to. Well, it depends. Matzah ashira. Matzah ashira is something you may not have encountered in Chutz Laaretz, which you might encounter here. Matzah ashira means enriched matzah. It's when they make matzah with a fruit juice. Okay, when they make matzah with a fruit juice, it's a little sweeter, it's a little bit softer. And there's a question: does this machmitz? Does this create chametz? Okay, when you mix flour with water, it does. But what about when you mix it with fruit juice? Machloket here between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim in Siman Taf Samech Bet, the Ashkenazim paskin like the Ramah, that Ashkenazim do not use matzah ashira, not on Seder night and not at all during Pesach. There is an exception for cholim, people who are sick, people who are zkenim, elderly people who have struggled digesting matzah. Sfaradim are more lenient about this issue. They permit it. However, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu feels strongly that the way it's produced today, sometimes they'll add water into the fruit juice, and he feels that there's a problem. One should be careful about this. The Rav Yosef is a little bit more lenient. Okay. Let's talk about gebrachs, and then we're going to talk about kidney. Okay, gebrachs, gebrachs in Hebrew is matzah shruya. Matzah shruya means that you take a piece of matzah and you put it into soup, or you put it into water. You want to make you make matzah pizza, okay? Ooh, who's salivating thinking about matzah pizza here? Or matzah braai, David. Thank you for reminding me, okay? So, or matzah lasagna, okay? Kneidelach, all these things. Chassidim, chabanikim, or machmir about matzah shruya. We are not stringent about this. We assume that if once matzah is cooked, okay, it doesn't, it can't become chametz afterwards. They're concerned that even though it's already cooked, maybe there are particles that haven't been fully baked, and when it touches water, it will bake and turn into chametz. It's not a concern that we paskin like, unless you have this particular minhag in your family. In general, one needs to make sure that every product that you buy for Pesach has a hechsher on it, it has supervision. Okay, this is based on a chumrah of the Ramah, the Moshe Isserles, in Siman Taf Mem Zayin, Si'if Dalin. He basically says that we assume that there's a problem unless something is supervised on Pesach. Svaradim don't paskin this way, but Ashkenazim do. And that means you need to make sure, so you can say, oh, wait a second, I have dates in my pantry. Shouldn't be any problem with dates. And there probably isn't, but should be a kosher Pesach dates. It doesn't mean it's chametz, but you should have you know, things that are kasher lePesach. If it's the same tomato sauce, it looks like, oh, it's the same olives. No, to make sure that everything has a hechsher for Pesach. Let's talk about kidneyot, okay? And this will be the final product that we talk about in terms of consumption of kidneyot on Pesach. And then I'm going to answer some of the questions in the chat here. Okay, kidneyot. Kidneyot is the one area which really a lot of people stumble with here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, why? In Chutz La'aretz is Ashkenazi dominated. Okay, Ashkenazim have a major and total monopoly on kashrut for Pesach, except in small places like Brooklyn, okay, or like in Deal in southern New Jersey. Maybe there are some small outposts. There may be in Tunisia or something, in Jerba, I don't know. But otherwise, maybe the UAE, I don't know. But in general, Ashkenazim dominate all kashrut industries throughout throughout the world. And therefore, kidneyot are totally 100% prohibited. You won't find kidneyot on the shelves. You won't find anything with kidneyot in it that's kasher the Pesach. That's in Chutz La'aretz. And then you come to Israel, and in Israel, the Ashkenazim don't dominate here. This is a Mizrahi, Sfaradi dominated. They have the monopoly here. Okay, they have the monopoly here. And so an Ashkenazi who moves to Israel has to figure out, what am I supposed to do about kidneyot? Because you pick up almost every single candy that you pick up, or piece of chocolate, says kasher the Pesach. Or a chashash kidneyot, or there are a million different signs or symbols that you might find, and you don't know what to do. It's kasher lePesach, but only for those who eat kidneyot. That's what that means. Machil kidneyot is ingredients that have that have kidneyot. Okay, so Milan, nachon, Milan still has Ashkenazi domination. Okay, you should speak to the Meish Isaacson about that. Now, I gave a big Shabbat Gadol drasha about this a few years ago, and one of the documents that I put on the website is Kidneyot Guidelines for Shift Day 2022. Okay, so you'll have access to this document, but I will go through some of the key things here. I encourage the following psak. Okay. Kidneyot is prohibited for Ashkenazim. Everything I'm saying is for Ashkenazim right now. Kidneyot is prohibited for Ashkenazim, hands down. It's not changing. It's not, oh, well, just because my neighbors eat it, or my son married a Tamani girl, and therefore I could eat kidneyot. There's none of this. Kidneyot applies. The prohibition is enforced. It's been enforced for about 1,000 years, and it's not going anywhere, and we're not trying to make it go anywhere. That's in terms of kidneyot. However, derivatives of kidneyot, or products that have small particles of kidneyot, okay, or oils that have kidneyot, are not part of the original gzera and therefore are not a problem. Understand? So we're not saying kidneyot is prohibited. If someone asks you, what did the rabbi say tonight about kidneyot? Are they permitted or prohibited? Please answer, kidneyot are prohibited on Pesach. Okay. However, derivatives of kidneyot, or certain when they're mixed in with other things, and these products are made before Pesach, then we could be lenient, and it's not a problem whatsoever. Okay, so there's a whole list of species that are considered kidneyot: rice and alfalfa, peas, millet, sorghum, sunflower seeds. The list is all on the document, which I will send out. Okay, but mustard and flaxseed are not kidneyot, but the custom is to forbid them because they grow in pods like kidneyot. Okay, say what?
Sunflower oil.
We'll talk. 1 second. There are peanuts. Peanuts, unless you're Rav Moshe Feinstein Paskins, unless your family is a minag not to eat peanuts on Pesach, peanuts are not considered kidneyot, and you may eat them. What did they do in South Africa? They had people ate kidneyot. Okay, in terms of soy. So some Paskin, Rav Dov Lior, for example, Paskins, that soybeans are not kidneyot. And certainly if a person is allergic to milk, and they need soy milk, so there's room to be lenient in that regard. Quinoa, we do not consider it to be kidneyot today. It's a new grain from the New World. It wasn't included in the original decree that was made in Europe in the 10th, 11th, 12th century. Some are also lenient about string beans and fava beans. Okay, so that's in terms of the different products, and everything's on a document. What about oils derived from kidneyot? Okay. So cottonseed oil is permitted. Okay. corn oil is not permitted. Canola and soya oil, you see a lot of canola oil. Many Ashkenazim are strict about this, but in principle, these are permitted for consumption. Now, if you have an option, you can use olive oil, so use olive oil. Okay, use cottonseed oil, use an oil, use vegetable oil. But if you don't, if you feel you need to use canola oil, you can use canola oil on Pesach. Again, this is a derivation. It's derived from the kidney oat, and it doesn't come in contact with water. Okay, and so we don't need to treat it more stringently than we treat chametz. Now, many food products say, can one consume these products? The answer is that yes, one can consume these products. Most of them have a product called lecithin, okay, which is liftit. It's a type of emulsifier. It comes from rapeseed. And this is, we can go through all the different arguments of why it's permitted. It's batel berov. Okay, it was made before Pesach. There's no taste. You don't taste it at all. These are derivatives of the kidney oat. Okay, so one can lenient about all these sweets and all the chocolates and all the yogurts and all these things that say la'ochle kidney oat bilvad, as long as you don't see kidney oat, as long as there are no actual kidney oat in there, it's just, again, one of the particles or one of the ingredients, you can consume these things, no problem. Yes. Okay, cornflakes is a problem. Exactly. Cornflakes is a problem. Yeah, that's a perfect example. Cornflakes, you see the corn, it's a problem. But a chocolate bar that has a little piece of liftit or lecithin in it is not a problem. Okay. So this is the what else? Do you need to sell your kidney oat? Can you eat at someone's home who eats kidney oats? So one does not need to sell their kidney oat or get rid of their kidney oats. You may eat on the dishes of a Sephardic Jew who eats kidney oats, even if the pots as long as there's no kidney oat in the pot. Okay, same pots can be used to cook kidney oats as they are to use, for other food. And you could eat in their, home. You could derive benefits from kidney. You can give your dog kidney oat if you want to give your dog or your hamster or your fish kidney oats. Rice cakes. There are some, and it's really a minority opinion, Rabbi Eliakim of Anon, says that you could even have a particular type of rice cakes, B&D rice cakes, because they are made with, without coming into contact with water. We generally don't pass in that way, but again, there are those who are lenient about this. In a year when Pesach ends on Friday evening, which it does this year, may one consume kidney oat on Shabbat afterwards. Okay, so Pesach is going to end on Friday night, but then we have an 8 day. It's not an 8 day of Pesach; it's just Shabbat. So one can have kidney oat. You can have kidney oat on that Shabbat. You could even cook the kidney oat on the Friday. Okay, you want to use your non-Pesach kidney because then, yeah, use your non, like in a tin or something, in a tin, but you have to have an Erev Tavshilin, right? You have to have an Erev Tavshilin, which enables you to cook on the Friday going into Shabbat, okay? No, you're cooking on tin. You're cooking on the Friday. It's on the Friday. You can cook on the Friday. You can cook on the Friday for Shabbat. Using an Erev Tavshilin, right? You start cooking on Thursday for Shabbat, but then you continue cooking on Yom Tov for the next day for Shabbat. That's why you have an Erev Tavshilin. Can you eat kidney oat on Erev Pesach on Friday afternoon? No. As soon as the prohibition of chametz starts, so about 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock this year, you may not consume kidney oat either. You can't say, oh, I'll give my kids a kidney oat snack 3 o'clock in the afternoon before the Seder. No, you're not allowed to. For vegetarians or vegans, speak to me afterwards if you have specific questions about this. So that's the general view of kidney oat. Someone just close the door. Yeah. So again, you can eat at a restaurant that also serves kidney oat, but you need to make sure that there are no kidney oat in the actual, I want to answer some of the questions on Zoom. Okay, if you have chametz gamur, stuff like whiskey or even dough or challah, can you sell it or do you have to throw it out? Chametz gamur means something that is absolutely fully chametz. Can you sell these things? So here there's a machloket. Some are stringent not to sell any chametz gamur, that includes whiskey and beer and bread. I would recommend you shouldn't have any challah or bread in your house, for sure. You should get rid of the, the crackers. Get rid of those things for sure. There's something that's a closed product and you feel it's a waste. It's like, bottles of whiskey. So, depending on the value of them, many people do sell these things. Some are stringent not to sell these things. So that's in terms of, but you should get rid of all the breads. Okay. Flavored Nurofen. I need to find out whether that's kasher the Pesach or not. Okay, good question. I will get back to you about that. What about Akamol for toddlers? So I need to figure out whether, which particular brands are kasher lePesach, not kasher lePesach. I will try to send out information about those. I will try to repeat questions when people ask. Can you go to a farm where kids milk cows and taste milk and butter made by a farmer that doesn't observe Pesach? Good question. The answer is recommended not. Okay, recommended not. Go to a place where they do observe Pesach. I could recommend a good place if you want. If you open KLP product before Pesach, you can use it also on Pesach, like grape juice. Okay, so you open a grape juice before Pesach. Now, if you decide to put chametz into the grape juice, then you shouldn't use it on Pesach. But if not, you can use it, no problem. Okay. Again, if it's something like a jelly or butter, peanut butter, and you stick it into the jelly and you stick it into the peanut butter and you stick it on the bread and then you put the knife back in, then you should be careful. But grape juice, no problem whatsoever, because there's no chametz that went into it. Okay, I will make the list of kidney available, no problem. What restaurants are not okay, assuming KFP, kosher for Pesach? So if I'm not mistaken, there's a list of... there's a list on the Ranana website. You should just be aware that there are resources available to you on the Ranana Rabbanut website. They have a list of all the kosher restaurants in Ranana. They tell you whether they're Mahadran. They tell you whether they're Rabbanut. They tell you what they observe about Shemitah. There's a list of over 200 restaurants. I will send out... I will send out a link to this, yeah.
Cafe Inn.
They all have kidney. So you need to make sure that you need to make sure when you sit at a restaurant that they're not giving you anything with kidney oat in it. Okay, this is important. But if I will check. I don't know which restaurants have kidney oat, which ones do not have kidney oat. Okay, now question: how do you cook on Yom Tov if you don't have a goy to switch on light or gas stove? Okay, so good question. It's not a specifically Pesach question, but it's a good question. The answer is that you could leave on a flame. People leave on a flame. You want to cover it a little bit, just in terms of danger. You put a hot water on, a kettle there, and you're allowed to raise the temperature or lower the temperature for the sake of cooking, right? But you cannot lower the temperature. Just stop. Okay, you could only raise it or lower it for the sake of cooking. So you leave it on for a 24-hour period, so that you have access. The other thing that you could do is you could keep a flame on. Okay, and then you light a new flame when you want to cook on Yom Tov, but it will still be on for the duration, through the end of Shabbat. Yeah. Oh no, that's not the point. The point is not to put out the flame. Oh, you're saying that happens automatically. I don't think will it do that, but then the gas is still going to be on. Oh, but then you turn off the gas. Second, then you. It's a good question. That's a good question. Not sure. It's a good question. Okay, good. Let's continue. So this is the second topic we've now concluded in terms of products that you're allowed to or not allowed to consume on Pesach. Now let's move to Hechsher Kelim. Okay, we're going to talk about kashering your kitchen. You guys want to take a 2-minute break before we do this? Yes. No. No. Okay. Okay. We're going to carry on. Let's talk about some of the principles of kashering. The goal here is that you understand the concepts and also then know what to do practically, okay? So I'm gonna speak about some concepts, then I'm gonna talk about how to kasher things, and then we're gonna go through specific objects in your kitchen so that you know exactly what to do, specific equipment. Okay, principle number one is a principle called ta'am ki'ikar. So you have a pot, okay? I look and I open, let's say this is my pot. Okay, I open, I look at my pot, I say, I don't see any chametz in here. Why should this be a problem to use this on Pesach? So besides for physical, actual visible chametz, There's something called bliot. Bliot is what is absorbed and immersed in the walls of your pots. Okay? We assume through heat that, let's say I'm cooking pasta in a pot, chametz gets absorbed into the walls of that pot. And now it's a chametz pot. Okay? So I can't then use it to cook on Pesach. What happens to the bliot? They're called bliot. So that which is balui, that which is soaked in and immersed in the walls of the pot. Well, we consider the tam, the taste there, to be constructive or to give a positive taste. After 24 hours, it becomes tam lifgam. We assume the taste is no longer positive in a sense. So I'm going to give you the most classical kashrut question that comes up all the time. Rabbi, how you doing? I just took meatballs and I heated them up for 5 minutes in my microwave, in my dairy cereal bowl. Am I allowed to have the meatballs? Yes or no? Can you have the meatballs? Yes or no? I mean, you took a meat food and you heated it up in a dairy bowl. Can you have the meatballs? Yes or no?
No.
Okay, good. So the first question that I ask in these circumstances is, when was the last time you used the bowl? If you did not use the bowl in the last 24 hours, meaning the bowl was used 72 hours ago, 80, whatever it is, it was before 24 hours, the taste that's being given in that bowl to your meatballs is pagum, and therefore it doesn't contribute to the meatballs. So it means I'm not having meatballs with absorbed milk or whatever it is, or cheese, because it was ready after 24 hours. If it's within 24 hours, you need to throw out the meatballs and you need to kasher your pot. If the pot was used already 24 hours ago, I can eat the meatballs, no problem. You could use the meatballs, but You need to kasher the bowl. Okay, the bowl needs to be kashered, and then we get into a whole discussion. Oh my God, it was my grandmother's china, or it was, you know, what am I supposed to do? Why are you eating with your grandmother's china on a Wednesday night? Okay, but et cetera, it doesn't matter. But you get the point. That's the most basic. Okay, now on Pesach. Now in theory, that means every 24 hours you should be able to switch dishes between dairy and meat. Okay, there's actually a rishon by the name of the Ra'ah who used to do this. We don't do this, okay? We don't do this. It's too confusing. We have separate dishes for meat and for milk. Now, how does this relate to Pesach? We're going to see that on Pesach, that which is in the walls of the pots, even though it's tam pagum, even though it's after 24 hours, we treat it as if it's, you know, it's real chametz, and it could be chozer v'ne'or. It could sort of become, how should we say, resuscitated, even though it's after 24 hours, and therefore we're extra stringent about chametz. Now, second concept, yeah? We're going to talk about every single material under the sun. Okay, glass and granite, and we're going to talk about composite metals and materials and all the different stuff, and wood and everything. Second principle, isura bala. It's interesting, if you think about chametz, is chametz prohibited during the year? Today, is chametz prohibited? No, it's not like a piece of pork, which is prohibited. It's mamish isur. Chametz is prohibited now. So technically, if I have chametz in a pot on 3 days before Pesach, there's no prohibition in that pot because chametz is not prohibited 3 days before Pesach. And yet the Rama is machmir, the Rama, for Moshe Israel is for Ashkenazim, is machmir, that even before Pesach, we treat chametz like it's asur, because once Pesach starts, retroactively, it becomes retroactively asur. Okay, so we treat chametz very, very seriously. Again, even because it's isura bala, therefore meaning it's like non-kosher is being absorbed into the walls of your pot. Therefore, again, we're going to be extra stringent. Forever. Okay. Any pot that was used to cook chametz. Okay, this is for Ashkenazim. Sephardim are more lenient about this. Now, the major difference between chametz products and non chametz dishes and stuff is that basically we assume that chametz is never batel. Okay, if I have a wheat stash the size of this room and there's one thing of chametz in there, it's all pasul. Because it's a mixture, and chametz is never batel. It's never nullified. And the same thing is true with the stuff that's in the walls of your pot. It's never batel, even if the tam is pagum. And therefore, basically what you need to do is you need to kasher all the pots that you want to use on Pesach, okay, that were used with chametz. You need to kasher everything. And by kashering, what you do is you remove, okay, you remove or you overwhelm is maybe the right word, any of the chametz that's in your pots, you make it pagum, and you overwhelm it by 60 times the amount by doing different actions that we take to get rid of the chametz. Okay, so that's like the general theoretical picture. One more principle is kibolo kach poto. The way that the chametz enters your object is the way that you take it out. So for example, if I'm using a baking tray, I'm making cookies, making like really good, amazing milk chocolate cookies, total chametz, there's direct contact between the pan itself and between the cookie. And that means the only way, and that's assumed to be like direct heat, the only way to remove the heat, the chametz from that baking pan is to use like direct fire, okay? Which you can't do because you're gonna ruin your baking pan. So you have to have kasher le Pesach baking pans. I'll give you another example. If I cook, if I cook in a bowl, okay? If I'm cooking pasta, we assume anything that's in a pot is immersed, the chametz gets into the walls usually through a liquid, okay? So that means you need to use a liquid to remove the chametz. Sometimes we pour chametz onto things, okay? So let's say there are examples where you pour something. Let's say I eat a pasta and pasta falls onto your kitchen counter. That's called irui kli rishon. You poured from what's called a kli rishon, something from the fire, and it pours onto the stove top, or it pours onto the formica or the granite, whatever it is. Okay, but there are many things which we just use for cold, okay? Your fridge doesn't absorb chametz because there's no heat. I hope there's no heat in your fridge, okay? So that means the only way to get rid of it is just to clean it. Just gotta clean it, okay? So we're gonna go through different ways that we remove chametz, and then we're gonna go through all the different products in your kitchen. So hagalah is called anything that absorbs chametz through liquid. We remove it through hagalah, okay? Hagalah, we immerse it in hot water. Libun is when we use direct fire to get rid of chametz that's in a product. Anything that came in direct contact with chametz, we use libun, which is a blowtorch or a direct fire. Okay, so how does hagalah work? And then we're going to talk about, go through all the lists that you do hagalah. It works as follows, very practically. You have a pot, okay? You have, first of all, you have to clean the pot. Make sure there's no actual chametz in the cracks of the pot. So let's say I have a pot that I use all year round to make, pasta. Okay, I want to use this on Pesach. I don't want to buy a new pot. It's a good pot, but I want to use it on Pesach. It's all metal, okay? And I need to clean it, okay? If there are any screws, you take off the screws. If there are any, like, cracks or sort of indentations, you should probably use a blowtorch in those places. Then you wait 24 hours. You don't use it for 24 hours. Now, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you an insight, the best time to kasher is right after Shabbat, because then you automatically have the 24-hour period when you're not using objects, okay? When you're not using your pots. You wait 24 hours. You take a big pot of water, boil the water, okay? And then you start sticking your pots, your silverware, your different objects into that boiling hot water. It's recommended to put some soap into the boiling hot water. You have to be careful. You have to have gloves. You have something to tonsils to grab the stuff out. And you put the pot in, you take it out, and then you put it under cold water. Okay. And then it's kasher le Pesach. So it's good to have a big pot to do this. I want to make sure it's clear that you know this. The Rabbanut here in Ranana does hechsher kelim for you. They have a drive-by hechsher kelim. Okay. It's on the Rabbanut website. I need to send this out for everybody. Okay. But there is drive-by hechsher kelim. And, you can, they'll do everything for you. But if you just have a few forks that you want to cash, just do it in your home. Yeah. Okay. So the big pot that you're using, you use one of two things. Either use a pot, a Pesach pot. Like we have one huge Pesach pot. Okay. We take out from year to year and we cash everything in that. Or you could use a big pot that you have not used in 24 hours. Okay. So that's basically how you do hagalah. So what are you doing hagalah? I take my big pot, I put soap in or detergent, whatever it is. I put it up to a boil, and then I start taking, I want to kasher my meat silverware. Start taking my meat silverware and dropping it into the thing, drop it all in, and just make sure that it's still boiling. Sometimes it lowers the temperature a little bit. And so silverware is one thing. A pot that you may have used to cook, you know, on a fire, that's also something that you do hagala on. A thermos, you want to kasher a thermos? Also, it's through water. It's through immersion through water. You stick it into the thing as well. What about plastic dishes? Can you kasher plastic dishes? What do they do in South Africa? No. Okay, no. Here we pass on that you can. Okay. The chumrah of Ramosha Feinstein is that you cannot kasher plastic because plastic was not around in the time of the Torah. He's concerned that maybe it has the same properties as clay, and you cannot kasher clay. Cannot kasher anything that has clay in it because we assume the clay absorbs but doesn't remove, doesn't pollute, doesn't spit out any of the, anything that's absorbed in it. And therefore, you could do hagalah on plastic, okay? Certain things that you think they might get destroyed if you stick them into a boiling hot pot. Corningware is not plastic. It's more like glass, right? We're gonna get there. Okay, we'll get to Corningware. So plastic, most posts consider you can kasher plastic. And so it's not, and again, just do hagala on it. And you could, it's not an issue. Okay, let's talk about countertops. Now, you can't take your countertop and stick it into a boiling hot pot. Okay, it just doesn't work. So what you do for a countertop, let's think about how does chametz get absorbed in a countertop. In a countertop. So normally the way it gets absorbed is I have my boiling hot pasta, and it falls onto the countertop. So this is not, whatever's in the pot is considered a kli rishon. That's like a very high heat. When it falls and it spills, it's already called an irui kli rishon. It's one step removed from the heat on this stove. So the way to remove the chametz that might be in your countertop is to take, you just use a kettle. You heat up the kettle and you pour all the way across your countertop. Okay, now it's very important that you hit every single spot of your countertop. It's messy, it's a little bit watery, you have to have a lot of towels, and it's a little bit dangerous, so don't have little kids around. But you have to pour your kettle, you go across, your kettle's like this, and you make sure that the falling water hits every single pot of the countertop. Okay? Yeah, it should be boiling hot water, yes. It should be bubbling, yes. Yes, it should be bubbling hot water. Yeah, it should be. I mean, it's you know. Okay, we're gonna talk about the stone in a second. Whether it's gonna. Okay, now this is the. Okay, now this is the best way to kasher your. Okay, kasher your countertops. Now, there are some who are stringent, that they do this and they cover, or some people just cover. They don't wanna pour anything on their granite. They're concerned maybe it will. It'll break or get cracked. Whatever it is. I'm going to talk about all of them in just a second. Okay. So therefore you can do irui kli rishon. You heat up the kettle and you pour it on every single spot on the countertop. If you want to be machmir, you could also cover as well, but you don't have to. You could do one or the other or both. Okay. Which materials? You can kasher stone, composite stone, Caesar stone, formica. Formica is a form of plastic. Okay, granite. You can kasher any of these things. You cannot kasher enamel. I don't know if anybody has enamel kitchen countertops. You cannot, again, you can't kasher anything with clay, but you can kasher any stone, any of these things. You should, just be a little careful. Make sure that the direct heat is not going to destroy your countertop. The rabbis who have stories of, you told me to kasher this, and so if you are concerned about it, so then cover instead. Okay, I don't want anyone to, have anything get destroyed. But all these things, again, even something like composite stone, it has glue in it. We paskin, you can kasher plastic. Okay, it is a form of glue and plastic, but you can kasher this, so it's not a problem. That is in terms of countertops. There's no issue with granite. You can kasher granite as well. I'm just going to answer some of the questions here. If you cover your countertop fully, you do not need to kasher it. Okay, you don't need to. Just make sure that the foil is strong, that it's not going to start, breaking open, just for cleanliness' sake. But it's not a problem. Okay, that is in terms of countertop. And again, this is a form of hagalah where you're pouring your, you know, hot water onto onto something. Okay. Good. What about a table? What are you going to do on a table? You have a wooden table. You're not going to start now. How does chametz get absorbed into the table? Okay. So again, a hot piece of pasta falls onto your table. You're not going to do a ruwi kli rishon on your table. If you can, if you're willing to do that, fine. But that's probably going to be a hard thing to do, and it might ruin your table. The best thing to do with your table is to clean it, cover it with a tablecloth, and you have a special, you know, kosher Pesach tablecloth that you use each year. And then especially if your table cannot withstand a ruwi kli rishon. If you want to do, you want to pour hot water on it, again, gezunta hei to you, but just be careful. Okay, your sink. Let's talk about sinks. How does chametz get absorbed into a sink? Yeah, question.
Wipe it off, not even soap or anything.
No, it should be clean. It should be fully clean. Yeah, and then cover it. Exactly. Okay. In theory, if you wanted to use special kosher Pesach table mats, that's fine too. You don't want to cover them fully, but you know, it's best to cover the table. Now, sinks. What type of sinks do you have? Metal, stainless steel, anything else? White. It's probably silicone. It's a form of plastic, right? I don't know. Mine is, we have one of them is like silicone. It's a type of plastic, okay? Now, the reality is that when it comes to a sink, there's more room to be lenient because the sink, how does chametz get absorbed? So you, I take my bowl of cereal and I pour it into the sink and there's hot water coming out from the faucet and the whatever from the cereal gets absorbed into the walls of the in the sink, okay? But there's a leniency by sinks because there's always soap involved. There's always soap. So, and soap prevents, it causes any taste that's in the walls to become pagum, to become, blemished. So what does one do in, there are some who are stringent and some who are lenient. I'm going to give you two different positions on this. Okay. Those who are lenient, they clean their sink well and they do, they dry it. Okay. Don't use it for heat for 24 hours again. And they do irui kli rishon. Again, they're pouring from the kettle on every single part of the sink. They're also doing this to the the tap itself. This is based on the principle that you can kasher based on a rov tashmisho. Okay, rov tashmisho means the majority way that your sink is used, and the most of the time the way that your sink was used for cold. It was there was soap involved, so you could do irui kli rishon. Some are stringent and say, well, but it's possible. It is quite possible that a block of, a chunk of, what's a very hot piece of chametz that you could think of? A chunk of, lasagna, fell right into your sink. That chunk is not even an irui kli rishon. It actually, it's a gush, a bar gush, the status of a kli rishon itself. And therefore, you can't kasher something that is the status of a kli rishon. And therefore, you have to cover the sink. So some people use plastic inserts, okay, in the sink. Some people are stringent about it. You can kasher silicone. Okay, again, you have to clean it well. We have silicone, one of our sinks, you can kasher it. You cannot kasher ceramic or porcelain or enamel. Anything made out of clay cannot be kashered. That you have to use an insert in your sink. Some people are stringent. They kasher and they use an insert. Okay, sink accessories. You should pour. You do hagalah also. You're pouring water on the faucet, on the drain. In terms of racks, you could do hagala, pour water onto the racks. By the way, if you have something that's big for hagala, you could also do it in parts. Like if you have a big pot and something, you could stick it into the hot pot and then stick on one side, stick on the other side until you get the whole thing covered. It's not like when you take something to the mikveh that it needs to be fully immersed at one point in time. You could do it in parts. I should just mention, if you want to kasher a big pot itself, how do you kasher a big pot itself? So you fill it up at the top, boil the water, and then you take another pot that has boiling hot water in it, and you drop the pot into the thing, and the water will fall to the side, and that's how you kasher the big pot itself. So again, it's a bit of a mess. Correct, it's a bit of a mess. Life is messy, right? What could we do? Okay, dishwashers. Let's talk about, let me just answer. Clothes, kitchen towels, and tablecloths just need to be washed? Yes. Kitchen towels, just wash them. Okay, you could just throw them into the laundry. Yes. From heat. Exactly. Okay. Before you kasher a sink, you can't use it for 24 hours with heat. Okay. Again, the best time to do this either Motzei Shabbat or do what?
You have water from the faucet.
Yeah, it should be only used cold water. All sink types can be kashered again, but not clay, not ceramic, not enamel, not porcelain, but other, you know, stainless steel certainly can be, silicone quartz can be, plastic sinks can be. Okay. Dishwashers. Did you kasher dishwashers in Chutz La'aretz? Yes or no? No, you didn't have one. Okay, so you didn't kasher. Okay.
Did you kasher?
No, I
didn't. New refs. Okay. We're more lenient about this here in Eretz Yisrael. At least I encourage people to be, or it's not that I encourage, Baskin, that you could be more lenient about. This is what you need to do with your dishwasher. Number one, you need to clean it out thoroughly. Okay, getting out all the gook and all the this and all the that. You got to clean it out thoroughly. You take the filter and you got to do hagala on the filter. Okay, doing hagala on the filter itself, it's plastic. Again, another example of a leniency by plastic, but do hagala on it. Then, if you could do hagala, also you want to do irui, you know, pouring water over every single part of the racks as well. You know, that's one option. You could also buy new racks if you want to, but it might be hard to find them. Third option is to then you run a cycle of the dishwasher on the highest cycle with the racks inside the dishwasher. Okay, you put soap into the little compartment, and you put soap in the whole compartment, like the actual dishwasher compartment, and you run it on the longest, highest cycle, and then you can use the dishwasher same way you would use it during the year, either for milk or for meats. But I didn't use it for both, one for the other, but you know, pick one, whatever you're using it for over Pesach, and you may use the dishwasher on Pesach. Yeah, okay. Next object that you could do hagalah, and again, that's a form of hagalah, right? Water shooting out from the dishwasher, and it's okay. Next thing is a Keurig Nespresso machine. Anybody have these? Okay, for these, you should you should clean it well. Don't use it for 24 hours. Take out the plastic pieces, whatever it is. Do hagalah on them, okay? And then you run a kosher cup through the machine. You know, you take a kosher LePesach cup, run it through the machine, and it's kosher LePesach. You can use your Nespresso or Keurig machine on Pesach, and just make sure the pods are actually kosher LePesach. Okay, an urn. In terms of an urn, there's a concern that chametz might have fallen into it. Especially, we often put our challah on top of the urn on Shabbat. Okay, so you need to make sure. I'll speak about that in just a second. But basically what you do is you heat up the urn as high as possible. Okay, you know, the height, as much water as possible. You could, again, throw in some soap, throw in some, whatever it is, some cleaning agent. And then you pour it out through the spout and then you clean your urn. Now, if you've used the lid and you put challah on top of the lid, okay, so some people get another urn for Pesach. Okay, or you can do hagala on the lid itself. Okay, you're doing hagala on the lid. Okay, last object in terms of hagala is a frying pan, but only for certain parts of the Jewish population. Okay, Svaradim paskin that you can do hagala on a frying pan. Okay, why? Because they assume most usage of a frying pan is using liquid, and there's oil or there's liquid and therefore you can kasher do hagala on a frying pan. Ashkenazim generally do not do hagalah on a frying pan. You would have to do what's called libun kal. You have to blowtorch the whole thing. Today, you know, you can get a frying pan in the supermarket. I don't know, 50 shekel. It's, you know, it's, but if one wants to kasher it, in theory, you can kasher it by doing what's the libun kal. In extenuating circumstances, even Ashkenazim, Rabbi Elazar, Melamed Paskins, if 24 hours have passed, you could even do hagalah if you need to on a frying pan. Okay, if there's need be. Teflon pans you cannot kasher, because if you would ever heat it up too hot, especially with a direct flame, it would get destroyed. Okay, so you're not allowed to do that. Okay, that's in terms of hagala. Now let's talk about things that all you need to do is just clean it. Just like use a sponge or use a towel, just clean them off. Number one, the fridge. You don't need to kasher your fridge. You just clean out the chametz. That's number one. Again, breadcrumbs in the freezer. You don't need to cover things in your fridge either. If you want to do it symbolically, great, but you don't have to, because how does chametz get absorbed into your fridge? It doesn't. If there's a crumb, it sits there on top of the counter. Just get rid of them. Okay, retainer or dentures. You should just clean them well. People do not put boiling hot water into their mouth. And there'd have to be chametz in there for it to get absorbed into the retainer. I do remember a scene in Bean. My Safta, Zichron Alevracha, used to love Mr. Bean. So there's one scene where he was rushing, okay? He's going, and he like had to get to the train, and he was trying to make coffee. So what does he do? He pours the coffee into his mouth plain. He then pours the sugar into his mouth. He puts the milk into his mouth, and then he pours the hot water into his mouth, and he, jiggles it all around, and he's got his cup of coffee. So no normal person does that. So you could just, some say you could do hagala on these things, sticking in the hot water, fine. Okay, let's talk about glass dishes. Okay, this is specifically for Sfaradim. And we'll talk about Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Ashkenazim are machmir, okay, on Pesach. They're also machmir during the year, but even more machmir on Pesach. That glass, what is glass? Is glass like sand? Is glass like ceramic? Okay, on the one, it comes from sand, so maybe it should be like ceramic. And again, you cannot kasher anything that's ceramic. Ceramic absorbs taste, but it doesn't let it out. So Ashkenazim treat it like sand, especially on Pesach, which means, and therefore, if you used hot, let's say you had a cup and you made daisa, okay, you made oatmeal, and I put it into a cup, it's going to be absorbed in that cup, and it's never going to come out. We're machmir, Ashkenazim are machmir like this on Pesach, and therefore you cannot use glass dishes on Pesach that you use during the year, okay? Svaradim are much more lenient. They assume that glass doesn't bolea, nothing gets absorbed into the glass itself. It's a shi'i, it's non-absorbent. And therefore, Svaradim could use the same glass dishes they use during the year. Just make sure there's no chametz in it, wash it off, and you could use it on Pesach itself. Okay, so for glass cups, you can do what's called milui v'irui. Milui v'irui means you take some vat, or you take some, whatever it is, fill it up with water, you put your glass cups in for a 24-hour period, they soak for 24 hours, you then pour out the water, 24 hours, pour out the water, 24 hours, and then you could use the glass cups. What is the issue with glass cups? So, the issue, the concern when it comes to glass cups is that, again, in Ashkenazim are stringent about even one-time usage of an object. So let's say I have a glass cup, I might have put whiskey into my glass cup, and some people are stringent that whiskey, because it's a davar charif, is bolea into the glass even with 18 minutes. So therefore, because you used your glass cup with whiskey even once, and whiskey is chametz gamur, therefore you have to be careful about the glass cup. So because of this, it's basically, it's the lechumra, you could do milui v'irui for glass cups. Glass cups, Ashkenazim can do milui v'irui 24 hours, 24 hours, and then you can use it on Pesach. Okay, next, the Mishnah Berurah does say that if you can afford to buy new glasses, buy new glasses for those who can. Clay cups, again, you cannot kasher on Pesach. You cannot use them on Pesach. Put them away. Tape it up. You're not using it at all. What about Kiddush cups? So Ashkenazim are stringent. You should try to do Hagala on the Kiddush cups because you might have used it for whiskey. And the Sfaradim say, I don't use a Kiddush cup with whiskey most of the time. I use it for grape juice or wine. All you need to do is just clean it. And you go by, again, Sfaradim go by the majority usage. Ashkenazim go by the most chamor usage, chamor tashmisho. Okay, garbage bins. I don't know anybody who cooks with high heat in their garbage bins. Okay, so all you need to do is clean them out. Make sure there's no chametz in your garbage bin. Or you could pour in some detergent, whatever's at the bottom there, and it definitely make it. Okay, things that, what are things that require what's called libun? Libun is when we use a blowtorch, okay? Now, there are two different types of libun. Libun chamur and libun kal. Libun chamur is when you heat up something to until it's like red hot heat, okay? And there are certain things that libun kal is like a stringency of the Ramah, but things that he thinks that like hagala is not enough, so you should do libun kal, which is you just put a blowtorch across the whole thing. Let's go through some of these things. A toaster, and we don't do libun gamur at all. No one does libun gamur. Okay, it's going to destroy things. So, for example, just a question about, so glass bowls cannot be kashered through Irui. Correct. Glass bowls cannot be kashered through Irui. Ashkenazim do not use glass bowls throughout from the year during Pesach at all. A toaster oven, you would have to do libun gamur on it. You're going to destroy your toaster. Put it away. Okay. A baking dish comes in direct contact with chametz. You'd have to make it red hot. It's going to warp. You have to have specific baking pans, baking pans for Pesach. Let's talk about an oven. How do you kasher an oven on Pesach? So how does chametz get absorbed into an oven? So chametz gets absorbed into the oven, maybe it gets absorbed into the walls, or it falls onto the bottom, or it gets onto the racks, or the steam that's in the oven. So what do you do for an oven? So who here has a self-cleaning oven? Okay, self-cleaning oven, you turn it on to, you don't need to do anything, but turn it on to high heat, okay? Put it on the highest heat, and it will burn out everything. It burns, that leaven burns out the chametz, and you're totally good for Pesach. That's if you have a self-cleaning oven. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, okay, which includes me, you should, what do? You clean the oven first to clean it. Right? That's a bit of a hassle, cleaning the oven. You clean the oven, and you put it on the highest setting for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, until it's really hot, as hot as it gets. And then it's kasher for Pesach. Okay, so you clean it, and then you put it on the highest setting for non-self-clean. In terms of the racks themselves, what I recommend to do with the racks is you can you can leave them in the oven when you're turning it on to the highest heat. Okay. That's what you should do for the self, but just be careful. The self-cleaning cycle might destroy the racks. You may want to be careful about that. But and then the racks are okay as well. Yeah. You're waiting 24 hours. Again, you're waiting 24 hours before you until you use it. Okay, what about the plastic mat at the bottom of the sink? So again, we said you can kasher plastic. The plastic mat itself that you're suggesting that it's separate from the sink itself. So you could do hagala on that. Stick it into the boiling hot pot, or you could do irui on the plastic mat that's at the bottom of your sink as well, or just buy a new one for Pesach. Porcelain and clay dishes. Again, these are things that absorb but don't let anything out. So for these types of things, if you use them only for cold, if you only use them for cold and you're 100% you only use them for cold, you could use them on Pesach. But if you use them for hot, then there's no solution because you'd have to do libun on it. And if you do libun on your clay pot, it's going to get destroyed. Porcelain with glaze is treated like regular clay as well. Okay, so even though it has glaze on top, it's still, we assume that it absorbs. What about a Shabbat blech or plat? Anybody here use a blech, an actual blech, an old school blech? No, but we use a plata. Okay, so what happens on a plata? Food spills onto the plata. Okay, so what do you do? So what you do is as follows: you clean it, you leave it for 24 hours, then you turn on the plata for an hour. Okay, again, get it to high heat, and then when you use it on Pesach, you cover it with tinfoil. Okay, it should be covered, your plata, when you use it on Pesach. Okay, let's talk about the stovetops. Okay, the grates and different types of stoves and stuff. Okay, we're getting close to the end here. Okay, remind me, Corningware is like glass. It's like Pyrex. So, if I'm not mistaken, one second. Let me just go back to Pyrex for one second. Practically, Ashkenazim don't kasher Pyrex or glass or tempered glass or any of these things unless it's shat hadchak, unless you have no other option. Either shat hadchak, there's no other option. But if you have another option, you should use the other option. That's what I would recommend. Okay, Ashkenazim, they would use these things as long as there's no problem. Okay, let's talk about the grates on your stovetop. Okay, just what type of stovetops do you have? I'm curious. Electric. Gas, electric, anything else? Anyone induction? Induction. Okay. Okay, glass, but it's induction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Glass induction or glass induction?
I don't think there's non-glass induction. Yeah, it's all okay. So let's talk about each of these things. First of all, if you have a stove, a glass, a gas stovetop with grates, so how does chametz get absorbed into the grates? It's with direct fire. But there's a reason. In general, there's a reason to be lenient because anytime something gets onto the grates, it gets burnt right away. Okay, so the way to kasher the grates themselves, you put a pot on top of each thing and you turn it on for 30 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is, and that will kasher the actual grate itself. Okay, so the grates are not really a problem. Yeah. Yeah, some people put it in the oven during the self-cleaning option. Okay. Now that's in terms of the now what about the area between the grates? Okay? You should cover those things on your gas stovetop. In terms of an electric stovetop, you should clean it well and you leave it on until it gets, you know, red hot, okay? And in terms of the glass on the electric stovetop, right? Glass on an electric stovetop. So there's some, you know, so what do you do about this? You know, basically you could do Iruvi Kli Rishon, okay? It shouldn't be a problem. Some people are concerned about this, but basically you, you know, you're pouring boiling hot water, you know, in between on the, on the glass stovetop. And otherwise, you can cover it, or do we really clear Rishon? But some think also if you cover it, it could crack as well. I'm not talking about induction right now. I'm talking about electric or gas stovetop. But you could either cover in between, or you could do Irui where you're pouring hot water onto it. Okay, what's
No, normal gas.
No, I'm talking. Okay, there are three different types. There's gas, there's electric, and then there's induction. Okay, these are each different things. But I'm talking about the space in between the grates. Okay, in between the grates, you should either cover that, although covering sometimes can cause it to crack, from what I understand, or you can do Irui where you're pouring hot water onto those things. Okay, that's in terms of the space in between. Now, so we've spoken about a gas stovetop. We've spoken about electric stovetop. You're turning it up to high heat, and then you're doing Irui in between. What about an induction stovetop? Okay, now an induction is like it's fascinating. I don't understand all the science, but basically when you put the pot on it, it's like gets really hot really quickly. The second you take it off, you don't feel anything, right? So it's through magnetic waves or something. So the way to do it is you heat it up, okay? You put your pot on, okay? You heat it up and you let it boil over and spill onto the induction, you know, itself, then into the heating element, and you pick up the pot a little bit and the water will go under and that will kasher the top of the element itself, the induction up. Abduction stovetop. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but there's no difference between a normal glass top stove and induction, just a glass.
So yeah. The problem is, how do you get it to the?
Oh, it doesn't get hot.
Yeah, it doesn't get hot in the same way. So you need liquid in order to. So basically, you let it heat over a little bit, and then you pick it up. Let some water get under it. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or you can wet it a little bit and then put the pot on top and
mm-hmm. It goes on the stove under your pot.
Oh, I see.
Do those need to be specifically for myself to get? Can I kasher them? They're stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just kasher them?
Yeah, you can. You could either put them in the oven when you kasher the grates, or you could do the. You could do. I would put them in the oven when you do the cycle of the oven. As long as they're not going to get destroyed, just make sure it's not going to get destroyed in the oven. Okay. Does that make sense in terms of what to do with the induction? So you don't have induction. You have induction. Okay. Good. And then the space in between, you just pour hot water onto that, and that's how you kasher that. Okay. Warming. Anyone here have a warming draw? Okay, warming draw. So, I still need to get a good answer about warming draw. I know that one way, you know, that the CRC website suggests kashering a warming draw is that the problem with the warming draw is it's hard to get it up to a high heat in order to kasher it. So one option is to use Sterno cans, the warming draw, and you leave it open, and it's a bit of a complicated process. I'm going to get back to you about the Starkey believes, they pass them, you can't kasher a warming draw at all. I did send a question to Rabbi Rimon today, and I'm waiting for his response on warming draws. Okay, barbecues, barbecue grills. I get this question every single year. On the one hand, if you think about all the gook on your grill, from all the stuff that gets stuck there, it's impossible to clean it out. You'd really need to use a major, heat it up to high, high heat, and you have to clean it out, and it's very hard to do that, and you might ruin it, and it's there's a lot of gook in there. The Starkey website does actually give a recommendation for how to do this. Okay, so I'll let you know what it is, but I will tell you the easiest way to barbecue on Pesach, just buy a little hibachi, okay, and or have a Foreman, a George Foreman. Anyone know George Foreman? You know what those are? Use one of those, and that's the best way to grill over Pesach. So this, I'll tell you what the Starkey says if you want to do this at home. A grill cannot be kosher by simply turning on the gas or electricity. Since food is roasted directly on the grill, it must be heated to a glow in order to be used. This can be done by sandwiching the grates between the charcoal briquettes and setting them on fire. Okay, an alternative method is to replace the grates of the grill. The part of the grill cavity, which is level with the grate, must also be kosher by heating it to a glow. This is due to the likelihood of food having touched the area during the barbecuing, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, yeah, I'll send this out, but this is a very hard thing to do and not worth it. Microwaves, okay, we're almost done here. Microwaves. Microwave things get absorbed through steam, okay? So the way you kosher a microwave, don't use it for, clean it out. Don't use it for 24 hours. Take a pot of, take a hot cup, okay? And heat it in the microwave for 5 minutes, 7 minutes until it, mostly gets, until it boils or gets, I think maybe 2 years ago that the pot, the cup cracked on me. So just be a little careful. You don't have to get to the point where it cracks, but it should, it steams out. The steam comes out and then it kashers your microwave. In terms of blenders and mixers, if used only for colds, just clean it and you could use it. But if you used it for heat or for davar harif, you should do hagala on it. Some people just put it away because, there are a lot of small pieces and parts to mixers and blenders, so best not to use it. But technically, you can do hagala on it. Yeah. You're saying there are some who are? I mean, there are, but I don't know. In our communities, we kosher microwaves. There are always stringent, everything that I've said, there's always a more stringent position. And you're welcome, more than welcome. I'm not dismissing them. I'm not putting those positions down. I'm not judging them, but the rabbanim that I've learned from, you can kosher a microwave. You just need to do it properly. Yeah, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes. It's clear that it's working, that there's steam and it's coming out and the water has...
I meant that if you should do it any time it's longer than
that
you ever use it. Like if you're using something...
Oh, yeah. Kibolo kach. The same way it gets absorbed is how you get it out. Okay. In terms of the grates on the stovetop, I'm just answering a question here online. You turn on the flame, okay, and you put a pot on top of it so it causes the flame to spread out. Leave it on for 20 minutes, and then the grates themselves are kasher for Pesach. Okay. Any other questions? Here in person. I'm going to take questions in person, then on Zoom. Yeah. Oh, the bar.
Oh.
I mean, is it? Does it ever come in contact with chametz in any way? Do you put it in the dishwasher? The cup gets put in, yeah, but there's no, I mean, is there ever chametz in the cup? Yeah, no, you don't need to. Just clean it. Just make sure it's clean. You don't need to do anything else. Yeah. Any other questions here? Yeah. Okay, rice cakes. Okay, so there is an opinion out there by Rav Eliakim Levanon, who runs the Kosher Up website. He believes that the particular type of rice cake called B&D rice cakes, I'm not sure what they are exactly, they don't come into contact with water when they produce them. So it's basically, think of the following example. If I have a grain on Pesach and it doesn't come in contact with water, is that chametz? If I take a grain and I toast it with no water, it's not chametz. right? In fact, in the Gemara in Masechta Pesachim, they say, what do they give to kids to keep them up at the night? They give them, you know, egozimu klayot. What's klayot? It's dried out, it's roasted grains. So if chametz comes in, does not come in contact with water, sorry, if a grain of wheat or barley doesn't come in contact with water, it's not chametz. Same thing is true with kidney oat. Well, if I take rice and I, you know, and it doesn't come in contact with water, so there's no, you know, there's no issue with, you know, he doesn't think there's any issue with it doesn't turn, there's no, you know, hachmatza or anything of that sort, leavening process. And therefore, he believes that rice cakes are, you know, are permitted. So, even though they're, he believes they're not even for Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim can eat rice cake. This particular type of rice cake, according to one psak of Rav Yakim Lebanon. Again, technically, you could take a. We don't do this. You could take a kernel of corn, okay, a kernel of corn, and you could eat it plain. It doesn't. That's not included in the prohibition of kidney oat. Kidney oat is when it's ground into a flour, and the flour might get confused with wheat flour. So, but if you're eating a plain corn piece of corn that doesn't come in contact with water, it's not. There's no issue of kidney oat. Kidney oat doesn't apply in that situation. So, popcorn. Yuval Sherlo has a psak. He says we don't. You know, popcorn also doesn't come in contact with water. Although when we make popcorn, we use a little bit of olive oil. Yeah, nachon, it's not water. Well, we tend to be machmir about it. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, send me a picture of it. If you have any products that you're not sure about, send me a picture of the products. Take a picture of the ingredients and what it says, and I'm happy to answer your questions about it. I'm fairly certain from what I know the kidney oat pasta is for Sephardim, but not for Ashkenazim. And that's, again, think of the cornflakes example. You know, you're seeing cooked kidney oat in that situation. But if you have kidney oat that never comes in contact with water, why should it be more stringent than wheat, which doesn't come in contact? You could have wheat. You could have, you know, barley, as long as it doesn't come in contact with water, because then it's not machmitz. So why should we treat kidney oat, you know, any more stringently than chametz? That's sort of the, yeah.
Saying that's okay.
Okay, so the question is about pet food that has chita in it. It has, yeah, that's probably a, there's no kasher la Pesach dog food or whatever in Israel. What? It's a rabbit. Okay, the Levants have a rabbit. Okay, just telling everybody online, the Levants have a rabbit. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. It eats hay. If it doesn't come in contact with water, but just plain dry wheat, no problem with it. I mean, you have to check whether it came in contact with water and it's been, you know, machmitz in any way. Wash tablecloths. All you need to do is put them in the laundry. Tablecloths, towels, put them in the laundry, clean them, and then you can use them on Pesach. Okay, any other questions online? Anybody have any more questions? Okay. With this, we are concluding our Chananda Pesach, Tavshin Pebet. I want to wish everybody here a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. If you have any questions at any point, please feel free to reach out. Send me your questions. Happy to try to answer them. We should have a beautiful Pesach, and Bezrat Hashem, we'll have the Gula Shleima this year.